Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Daily Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. Good day, eh? And welcome to Offbeat Southwest Canadian History. This is the story about how the Oregon Territory almost became part of Canada, eh? Instead of, like, the United States. So, like, sit back, relax, pull your toque down over your ears and crack a cold one. I'm going to tell you how we almost ended up speaking Canadian in the great almost province of Oregon. The story of John Jacob Astor's Pacific Fur Company expedition to Oregon in 1810 is remembered today, if it's remembered at all, as a dismal failure. Dozens of people died, his ship sank, and he ended up selling Fort Astoria to the British at a severe loss. But what most people don't know is that if Astor's explorers had stayed home, the Oregon Territory would probably be a Canadian province today. Here's the story. The Astor expedition left shortly after Lewis and Clark got back. It involved two journeys, one by land and one by sea, to the mouth of the Columbia to set up a network of trading posts there. The project was ill-starred from the start. The ship Astor sent around the Horn, the 94-foot, three-masted windjammer Tonquin, was captained by a tactless, arrogant ex-Navy officer named Jonathan Thorne. Thorne, when he got to Astoria, insisted on sending a rowboat out to scout the channel immediately despite the heavy seas. The first boat was never heard from again. The second was almost lost, and a third located the channel for the Tonquin, but swamped and sank before it could get back to the ship. So the Tonquin sailed into Baker Bay and founded what's now Astoria. Then it put back out to sea and headed north, making for the Russian colony of Sitka. It never made it. Thorne's personal style infuriated not only his passengers, but also the natives who came to trade with him. This last item proved fatal when, during trading on Vancouver Island, he had the local tribal chief thrown overboard, apparently thinking the soaking would get him to lower his asking prices for pelts. The next morning, the natives came back and told Thorne they'd learned their lesson and were now ready to deal. Once on board, they got out knives and proceeded to avenge the insult to their chief. The next day, somebody touched off the powder magazine, and that was the end of the Tonquin, along with most of its crew and a great many natives as well. The damage had been done by then, though. Thorne's bargaining style not only cost the expedition its ship and left the surviving Astorians stranded in the wilderness, but it had angered natives all along the coast. The people the Tonquin had left to found Fort Astoria on the northwest tip of what's now Oregon had a lot of fences to mend, and many of the natives clearly didn't plan to leave them alive not long enough to mend them. In desperation, Pacific Fur Company partner Duncan McDougall pretended to have a, quote, bottle of smallpox, which he would uncork if attacked. This kept them alive, but made them even more friendless. Meanwhile, Astor's overland expedition was working its way westward, more or less along what would become the Oregon Trail years later. The overland party fared a little better than the seafarers, in no small part because of the presence of Marie Dorion and her family. Things went relatively well for them at first, but about halfway through the journey, the overland party, like Captain Thorne's Argonauts, fell victim to arrogance. This time, it was the French voyageurs in the party. Overconfident in their skills as river navigators, they convinced the rest of the team that they should give up their horses and take to the river, Henry's Fork, which drains into the Snake. Anyone familiar with the Snake River's reputation for navigability can guess what happened next. They found themselves stranded in the middle of the Snake River Desert in what's now southern Idaho, next to an utterly unnavigable river. Most of the overland crew managed to get through one way or another, but they only beat a rival British expedition by a few months, and they utterly failed to establish a credible land route. With the Tonquin gone, the British in control of the high seas, and the War of 1812 breaking out, Astor gave up and sold out to the British. Well, a month after the sale was completed, a British warship arrived and, quote, seized the newly purchased Fort Astoria. When told that he was seizing British property, the captain replied that orders were orders and his orders were to seize the fort, and that was that. Now comes the interesting part. When the war ended, part of the negotiations centered around the Oregon Territory and who would get to claim it. Feeble and isolated as it was, Fort Astoria was American when the war broke out. It wasn't sold until after hostilities broke out. Moreover, the fort had been seized by military force, although not from the Americans, so that made it technically a spoil of war. The war-ending treaty involved returning all spoils of war, so the Astorians briefly got it back, although they immediately returned it to the people they'd sold it to. The important result of all this was that when the peace treaty negotiations got underway, both America and Britain had a credible presence in and therefore a claim on the Oregon Territory. So when their status was made official by the resulting treaty, the first of several joint occupancy arrangements was made. Joint occupancy is what led, under pressure of thousands of American homesteaders in the subsequent decades, to Oregon and Washington becoming part of the U.S. rather than Canada. But if the Astorians had not been in Oregon when the war broke out, or had sold their holdings to the British before the war got started, the treaty that ended the war would almost certainly have defined the U.S.-British border and made Britain's claims on Oregon official. And we'd all be speaking Canadian today, eh? This story was first published on August 8th of 2010 under the headline, How Oregon Almost Became Part of Canada. Key sources for the story included O. Ned Edens, Bill Gulick, Roger Kaza, and OregonEncyclopedia.org. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you again for listening, and I do hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. To learn more, hit our anchor page at offbeatoregon.com. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com as well, where you'll also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is also covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. One more thing. My book, Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, it's now out on audiobook. I personally recorded and produced it, so it's narrated by yours truly, my first audiobook production. Anyway, if you like this podcast, you probably will enjoy it. It's available at audible.com, and I've set up a redirect link to take you right to it, offbeatoregon.com/audiobook. By the way, if you're not already an audible.com member, you can get a copy of my audiobook for free if you sign up for their free trial membership. The trial membership is one of those deals where you have to be sure and remember to cancel your membership before the next month comes around. Of course, you have to watch out. You could end up like me. I signed up for that free trial membership planning to cancel, and instead I ended up upgrading it. Turns out I love audiobooks, and I go through about 5 a month now. If you do decide to give Audible a try, be sure and sign up through your favorite participating podcast's referral page. Offbeat Oregon History doesn't have one of these because we're strictly non-commercial, but some of my very favorite podcasters do, including Oregon's own Dan Carlin, producer of Hardcore History. Dan lives in Eugene, and I love his podcast. Anyway, if you sign up to try Audible through Dan's referral page, it's audiblepodcast.com/Dan Carlin, they give him a small spiff, and it doesn't cost you anything. So I'd encourage you to do that if you want to try this out. In any case, our next show will be coming your way around 6 a.m. on Friday morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.